Well, good evening, listeners. This is Dr. Gianni Hayes with the show, The New World Order Disorder, and my co-host is Brian Davis. Say hey, Brian.
How you doing, Gianni?
I'm hanging in there. How about you're listening to the American Voice Radio Network, and we are heard all over the world. Are we not, Brian?
Yes, ma'am, we are.
And some of the ways that people can listen to us, and I'm going to let you do that tonight because every week I do that, and you can start, and I will give the first one, and then you could do the whole bit.
Well, okay, let's do it.
All right. One, of course, is through the phone bridge, which is 218-486-7200. And as soon as an automated voice comes on, you punch in 361113. And you can hear the show on the phone if you can't get us any of the other ways that Brian's going to tell you.
All right. Well, you can also get us on the Internet. If you're listening there now, you already know how to get to us. There's also AM and FM across the country. And KU-band satellite, Galaxy 25, Telstar 5, Transponder 5, frequency 11836.
GianniHayes.net. That's all, Gianni, G-I-A-N-N-I, Hayes.net. Now, Brian, I'm going to give you a choice. Do you want to read the first guest or the second guest?
I'll start with the first one. Might as well get it over with early.
Okay, go right ahead.
Okay, I do want to encourage people for this guest, go to our website, GianniHayes.net, and you will have a link to tonight's guest, and that is www.drjudywood.com. What you're going to see, and I will tell you, if you're on dial-up, it may be a little bit intensive, but on high speed, you'll be fine. She has a massive amount of photography, video, things from 9/11 that we're going to be discussing tonight. And it will be probably beneficial to everyone to actually be able to see that while she's speaking. Anyway, our guest tonight, Judy Wood, is a former professor of mechanical engineering with research interest in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, optical methods, deformation analysis, and materials characterization of biomaterials and composite materials. That's a mouthful. It really is. She's a member of the Society for Experimental Mechanics, co-founded the Society's Biological Systems and Materials Division, and currently serves on the, it's abbreviated SEM, she serves on the SEM Composite Materials Technical Division and received her BS in Civil Engineering, an MS in Engineering Mechanics and Applied Physics, and a PhD in Materials Engineering Science from the Department of Engineering and from engineering science.
I can always count on you, Brian.
You know it. I just love to keep you in stitches. You and between you and Frank, I'll never live this down. This is going to be the rest of my life. Engineering science and mechanics at Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University in Blacksburg, Virginia. Anyway, her dissertation involved the development of an experimental method to measure thermal stresses in bimaterial joints. And she's taught courses including experimental stress analysis, engineering mechanics of materials, and strength of materials testing. And I tell you what, I had a chance to interview Dr. Wood before the show to get an idea of what we're going to be going over tonight. She blew me away.
Yeah?
Yeah. So
That's what I have you do, is to get all that information so you can blow us away.
You know, I found Dr. Wood's site, what, about a year and a half ago, and she was transitioning at the time. I was thrilled when you found her, but I talked to her, and we're about to find out. I mean, this stuff, I thought with an engineering background that I had an idea of what was going on. She blew me away. This is going to be fun. Dr. Wood, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
You know, this is our 9/11 show, and we're doing this all month long, Dr. Wood, and we've got you here tonight because Brian and I know you have some special information that you would like to share with the listeners, so we're going to let you get started, and then I know that Brian had done the screening of you, and he can certainly jump in at any time, and I certainly will as well, so go right ahead.
Well, I tell you what, I will start her off in a direction. Dr. Wood, you and I talked before the show, and in order to get things kicked off, because we've only got an hour and a lot of material to cover, I'd like to start off leading into what we talked about with molecular dissemination and some of the other things. But in order to get there, what I'd like to start is, what do you think did or did not happen on 9/11 as far as the buildings are concerned? And Why do you think these things?
That's a very good way to put it. If you go to my homepage, it's drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. I'm trying to move to a new homepage that's less cluttered, but right now there's a whole lot of thumbnails and accidentally clicking on different pages. There's the first row of a lot of pictures. On the right-hand end, there's a picture that was taken. It's kind of small, but it's looking kind of north-northwest. It's taken on the afternoon, or around noon, maybe it's before noon, on 9/11. We know what day it is because Building 7 is still standing. But there should be a tower between us and Building 7. We see just flat ground. Where'd the building go? That's the first thing to notice. And noticing and observing is one of the greatest key features to all of this. We're told what to believe and what not to believe and what to think, what not to think. Just open your eyes and observe yourself. And you start seeing a whole lot of things. But the greatest secret is, where'd the building go? There's two 110-story buildings, 500,000 tons each, that just went away in 8 or 10 seconds. That's phenomenal. Something just so bizarre had to have occurred. So what did or didn't happen? Well, right off the bat, we see some buildings went away. They were there that morning, but by noon they were gone, so we know that much. And I think it's so important to not make assumptions. Because we heard planes hit the tower, so therefore they had to have. Or we heard that it was 19 bad guys with box cutters, so therefore that's a given fact. And just start over and open your eyes and just look. And that's actually kind of fun. You look and you see more and more, and it opens a wide world.
So what do you think then happened? I mean, you refer to the fact that the buildings were there, then they're gone, and of course all of us have been fed this information that planes took it down. What are you thinking?
Well, first of all, the story we were given was that planes went in and made these cookie-cutter holes in the sides. I think anyone who knows much about physics or has done anything themselves knows that that doesn't happen. It's kind of like you throw a baseball through a window. It doesn't make a baseball-shaped hole. It makes, you know, it crashes in this spiderweb kind of pattern of breakage of glass. You know, various things happen. But what got me on that day was the upper right, you know, wing entry hole. It's a little slot, 5 inches thick. Aluminum making a slice through a steel beam and leaving no scraps on the ground. I showed that to another engineering professor, and they jaw dropped, and they said, something's wrong with the story we were given. Yeah, you just look at it, you know. We've all seen Roadrunner cartoons. We laugh at them. Young children laugh at them. Why? Because they're impossible. Things like that just don't happen.
Okay, so I guess in order to kind of cut to the chase to get some of the other items we talked about, do you think bombs went off, thermite, holograms? What do you think it was, maybe?
The biggest tendency here is for people to jump to the answer and then look for the evidence to support it. And I guarantee you, if I think we all know this is a psyops. And if it's a psyops, you know that's not going to work because you're missing, you know, you're overlooking something you shouldn't. And look at it kind of like a scavenger hunt. You know, what works, what doesn't work. When can you discard a particular idea? I won't, you know, immediately jump to answers, but I can eliminate, you know, big bombs going off like nukes. You have all this unburned paper, and I think everyone can remember all the unburned paper all over the place. So you can't have some huge heat that would, because it would be burning. But there's an interesting, some kitty's doing something. But there are some interesting images we've seen with what appears to be glowing metal. and we're told that that's hot. And we see fumes coming up, and we're told that's smoke. And when I developed this new vocabulary for these things, I did so to keep myself from being biased. Because if you call it smoke, you're assuming it's a fire. And, okay, you see fumes coming up. That just described that phenomenon. But there's this glowing metal look that's bizarre. And, okay, it's particularly what I call the Cheeto picture. It looks like old Cheeto on the ground, an orange curl, but maybe it's a piece of steel pipe. You look at that, and either that picture is fake, or the glowing stuff is not hot. That's the conclusion I come to with that.
Now, why would you say if it's glowing orange that it's not hot? I mean, or what would make you think
it's fake?
It's
either a fake picture, or it's not hot.
Right, but what would lead you to believe that?
Well, it's a hydraulic equipment that's holding it. And if you look on my home page, it's in that second row, right in the middle. You see, I call them, generically call them diggers. Some of the earth-moving equipment is holding something up. And below that, you see some other weird fire pictures. This digger is holding it up, so the thing's operational. It, right behind that jaw is, you know, hydraulics. That can't. It has a very narrow window of operation. It's kind of like your car engine. Your car engine is going to operate at 1,000 degrees. You know, it's just got this window of temperature. But in addition to that, if that thing is near melting temperature, how did the digger get it out of the ground? It had to dig down in there for a while. Why isn't the digger melted? But also, yeah, why isn't the hydraulics locked up? And then once it picks this thing up, why is it picking it up? Where is it going to take it, to the dumpster? You know, it doesn't make sense. But if you think of it as, you know, at first I thought it might be a fake picture, but now I'm thinking it's real because I've seen other evidence and I can explain it. It's a particular phenomenon that comes from this molecular dissociation process.
Okay.
But before I knew about that, I'd been just noting that picture. Okay, we got something weird going on here.
In order to get into the molecular dissociation, can you explain what that is to the people that are listening?
Molecules, when if you have a chunk of steel, all the molecules are stuck to each other in there. They're attached. They're attracted to each other. They're bonded together. And if for some weird reason they suddenly decide to start repelling each other, the material just breaks down and turns to dust. And that's something that I am absolutely sure with. There's a particular picture that I call it the fuzzball intersection. There's an intersection about a block north of the complex. So the wind was blowing southward. It's after both towers have gone. It's just long enough for the air to clear out. And you see a clear blue sky. The dust has obviously settled out to the ground. But then you notice around these people's feet, some firefighters and some policemen, these fuzz balls. It's just like this fuzzy, real fine, super fine dust. And wait a minute, how could that have settled out of the air in like 10 minutes? And then pretty soon you notice it's coming up all by itself. And the streets look like they're fuming. And then they bring in the street cleaners and scrub them down. I started noticing this process, and that's when it became quite apparent. You had to have coarse dust settle out of the air that quickly. And after it settled out, it became fine dust. How does that happen?
Well, I'm also noticing the quantity of dust in the pictures. It looks like it engulfs the whole city. Yeah, I mean, just for the pictures.
I think it's funny that with the Seattle Times, when talking about the King Dome, the Seattle King Dome, they blew up with dynamite, controlled demolition. Oh, it filled all of downtown with dust for almost 20 minutes. It's kind of funny. By contrast, I mean, the dust just was gone after 20 minutes, and it didn't go higher than the highest point of the King Dome. And what we saw in Manhattan went up and up and up. It's the upper atmosphere. And that was another puzzling thing. Why would it go up?
Well, As far as the dust goes, in a standard building collapse, would that much dust be created? I mean, you would think you would have just chunks of stuff, not fine dust.
Right. I've been looking at the websites of some of the contractors for the NIST report,
mm-hmm.
and there's one of them that looks into explosives, and they make buildings, yeah, and they have test structures that they blow up, and concrete facilities, and you see they have big chunks, little chunks, in between size chunks when they do their tests. They don't have powder. But we didn't see big chunks, small chunks, and between size chunks. We saw a uniform, fairly uniform looking powder. Well, uniform, below a certain range. I mean, there were no golf ball size pieces and bigger.
Okay.
What about the cars that in your site, I know you talked about it seemed as though they had spontaneously combusted.
It's not from heat. It's not a regular fire.
These were cars that were quite a distance from the towers.
Yeah, there's all sorts of distances. There's a parking lot several blocks away northwest of the towers, and there's a sea of paper in between that didn't catch fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the cars were doing whatever they're doing, this weird toasting process. And it was that was another aha moment, is over on FDR Drive, I was noticing this police car, which looked like it kind of sagged in the middle. One place was really toasted looking, and one nanometer to the right of it, pristine condition, new wax job. That's not a regular fire. A fire would have hot, medium hot, cooler. It would have a gradation. This was a very fine line, and with my background in optics, that looked like, two-beam interference, where you have constructive and destructive interference, where you would have something happen in one place and not another.
So to kind of tie this together, what is this effect? What are a few of the other things that would be seen, and what do you think could cause something like this?
Well, we have upside-down cars. They're parked in the regular place, except they're upside-down. Quite a few of those. There's with trees fully covered with leaves right next to it. There's glass is all blown out of the WFC buildings, but no stab wounds in the buildings, no projectiles, apparently. Particular materials were affected, like all of the marble facade around the entrances, but not the rest of the facade. And when you start looking at effects on one type of material and not another, that's a directed type of energy.
Hmm.
If it's just a kinetic energy device, it explodes and stuff goes flying in all directions. And it doesn't care what it's tearing apart.
You say a directed kind of energy, like a special beam of energy?
Yes, directed energy is a very, very broad field. My definition of it is energy that's directed, but DEW, energy that's directed and is used as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Directed energy weapons. That could be anywhere from a taser to something that causes the Twin Towers to go poof in 8 seconds. But, it's like saying weapons. There's a whole lot, big category of weapons. It's anywhere from a BB gun to a rubber band to, bombs. It's a very general category, but it has to be an energy weapon, but it also has to be directed, because we saw cylindrical holes through buildings. Like, all of the middle of Building 6 disappeared. It looked like somebody took a post hole digger and dug out cylindrical cutouts, removing about 50% of the mass of it.
Wow, so... That's interesting you say that maybe it potentially is a directed energy beam of some type. Then that certainly gives cause for intentional.
By somebody. We don't know, but who.
Right.
But I try to stay away from the end point, because if you get in too big of a hurry, you miss the scenery along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to learn from this. the biggest thing is that something horrendous happened that day. You look at the material, something unbelievable. Whatever it was, we should study it because there's so many good things we can do with it. We can use it for good purposes. And it was very much horrendous. And it didn't just happen that day. Do you realize it's still happening?
In what regard?
Well, I was there in January, and the material is still breaking down.
Now, you had mentioned that in our pre-show interview. You had mentioned that immediately after 9/11, the dump trucks came in. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was and kind of lead into that?
Yeah, Rudy Giuliani, the next morning on a radio station, was bragging about how he had 120 dump trucks going in and out of the city all night. He claimed it was taking debris out, but what are you doing hauling debris out before you found the survivors? Because as soon as you start moving things around, you crush somebody. And then the pictures that I saw that were taken on the morning of the 12th, big piles of brand new dirt dumped on things. So I can put two and two together. It seems like if you had dump trucks coming and going all night, saying that they were moving debris, then people quit asking questions. They say, okay, that's why we saw trucks all night. I do have photographs of trucks coming into town, dump trucks, you know, big convoy of them. That picture was from the 23rd.
Can we backtrack, Judy, just for a minute? Because you started to say something that we got a little bit off it, but you said it is still breaking down. And I find this interesting. And can you tell us in what ways it's breaking down and what are the ramifications of that? What does that mean to the general public?
Okay, let's go back to where I noticed the dust had settled out of the air, and then it got finer and finer and started rising up. And then I noticed that they brought in street cleaners the afternoon of 9/11 to scrub the streets because somebody might notice this fuming coming up, and they can't say that's molten metal because it's all over Manhattan. But there's this problem with the lawns. They have some, you know, grass growing in the front of WFC 2 and 3 and 1, and they were fuming. So what do you do with those? Enter the dirt trucks. They put wet potting soil, or I assume that's what it is, it's what it looked like, all over the lawns. And then a few weeks later, scoop it up and bring in some more. And it's like changing diapers, you know, like a sponge soaking up something and taking it out and bringing in new dirt. And it's because some process is ongoing. Now, the Bankers Trust building, I don't know if you realize they repaired it. They had that gash in the front. And they repaired the gash, putting in new steel beams, but then they realized it was ongoing, it was still breaking down. And they decided they better take the building apart. So they started taking it apart, and they, you know, more problems, and it's still like halfway down, I think. But they got down to where that area where they'd replaced the beams, and they're just super rusty now. This is terrific amount of rust. It looks like they've been sitting in the bottom of the ocean for 100 years.
We're going to take a quick break on that note. Judy, just kind of sit tight, Brian. We're going to come right back after station identification. All right, listeners, this is Dr. Gianni Hayes, and we are back, Brian and I, with our 9/11 show for the month, and we have a super guest, Dr. Judy Wood is on, and we are talking about what really went on in 9/11. Judy, one of the things that I do know, having talked to many physicists myself, is that when you look at something that happened such as 9/11, you certainly take into consideration the structural data and the ground shaking and visually what has transpired. But was there any indication on a seismic scale of the shaking of those buildings?
Very, very little. I've done an analysis on that as well early on. It mentioned the King Dome. The King Dome was 1/30th. That's 3-0, 15 times 2.
Mm-hmm.
1/30th of the potential energy of the towers. Yet it made a bigger bang on the ground than the South Tower. It made the same bang on the ground that the North Tower did, a 2.3.
Now, you also mentioned that the kingdom was on dirt and that the high-rise towers were actually on bedrock and should have been even more amplified because of that.
Correct. They should have rang like a bell. And the seismograph station at Lamont Doherty is on the same bedrock. Yeah, nice direct ring right over there.
You had mentioned that had bombs or something that big have gone off, it could have broken the bedrock and flooded the tub. Is that, you mentioned something about that?
Yeah, if a 500,000 ton, each of those towers are 500,000 tons, if they had slammed to the bedrock and that big of a bang had hit, it would have broken the bathtub. And the basement, the bottom seven floors of the tower down to bedrock are below the water table. And so there's this water retaining wall built around there. There's also the PATH train tunnels go under the Hudson and up to the bottom of the bathtub. And you would have flooded all of the subway tunnels and the PATH train tunnels. Big problems.
Listeners, we're at 1-800-433-1429. Feel free to call in and talk to Dr. Judy Wood. What about, you said no nukes, and I think you're absolutely right about that, but what about smaller explosives planted throughout both buildings?
Well, if you have a whole lot of explosives in the list, I wouldn't have any idea how you could remote control them because, you go to a blasting site, just turn off cell phones. But let's say that you've managed to get them all in sequence and whatnot, but you get all those pieces of beams, you break them loose, they still have to go bang down to the ground. The ground did not experience that big bang.
Now, you had mentioned early on with this molecular dissociation that it goes back to the electron spin, and when you get them spinning the wrong way, now this is partly from our discussion before the show, when you get them spinning the wrong way, it's like taking two magnets that are holding each other together and all of a sudden turning one, it just wants to fall off. And you had said that you have seen experiments of this that have been done in steel, aluminum, concrete, and it had different effects. Can you tell us about some of the effects on steel and of course, the concrete, I guess, fairly obvious, but tell us a little bit about that. What happened to all that stuff?
Various things have. I've seen actual samples that someone has made on a very, very small scale. But the amount of energy they use is even smaller, like the amount of a 75-watt light bulb. It turns a piece of a 2-inch by 3-inch cross-section of aluminum rod or aluminum bar to dust. It makes it explode from the inside out. And what the aha moment looking at the South Tower, when it starts to have that tipping top, it looks like all of the material, instead of the molecules attracting each other, suddenly repel each other, as though it's turning into steam, like water turning into steam. When water becomes steam, it expands in volume by 1,600 times. And I've been studying that when I looked at this picture of the tipping top of the South Tower, and like, wait a minute, is there a way you can do that with solid material? Because it sure looks like that. And then I found the work of John Hutchison, who just sort of does this, kind of as a hobby. It's a fun thing to do. Isn't doing it for anything. As a matter of fact, he won't do it for a government that wants to use it as weapons. But he did have the U.S. government in his lab in 1983 for 4 months, filming everything he did, taking careful notes. Somebody from Los Alamos was there, and the Pentagon. Kind of interesting. Wonder what they had, why they wanted to watch it. But it does different things to different materials. And when I started, before then, I had made this big list of all of the evidence I'd noticed, all of the phenomena. When I started looking at John Hutchison's work and reading technical articles that others have written about it, it was unbelievable that every single one of these phenomena were accounted for.
Mm-hmm. We have a question in the chat room, Judy. It says, please ask her if she has seen the video September Clues with actual newscast broadcast on 9/11, which has lots of evidence that there were no planes. Also, it has nothing to do with holograms. I think they use computers to do it on TV to make the fake planes, that is, blue-green screen technology or computer programs. They can do anything with that and use it all the time for TV and movies. Thanks.
I don't like to argue opinion so much. I'd rather discuss evidence and what evidence we can see and feel and touch.
But do you think it was a plane or a missile that hit, or something different, based on your evidence?
Or a hologram.
If we're going to jump to opinion, we skip the evidence. But the subtleties I have noticed in the video footage is that the lighting is not right. And I've worked with optics a lot and know that lighting isn't right when you're, using diffraction gratings or using some kind of optical coating of things. You can coat a surface that has zero reflectance. Weird things like that. I also know that technology is available that they can project images. In 1999, in the Washington Post, there was an article. I mean, this is, public domain. There was an article called "When Seeing Is Not Believing." They were discussing projecting a big image of Allah over Baghdad to scare people or get them to do something. This technology was available in 1999, and it was probably 20 years before that if they're talking about it in 1999, because they're always 20 years ahead of what they're telling you.
Mm-hmm.
So we know the technology is available for that. You can pick various options. I've not gotten into the plane thing so much because, I know planes didn't make those holes. Planes didn't make the towers go poof. And, it was sort of like the getaway car. It was a cover-up for the real crime. But I haven't felt the need to sort out all those details and, go off on that wild goose chase. There's enough people looking into that. But there wasn't anyone looking into, where'd the buildings go? We just see powder down there. The picture is taken right afterwards. They're ground level. The rescue workers walked horizontally or rappelled down into caverns.
But you keep saying, where did the buildings go? If we believe what we see on TV, and again, I use that as a major caveat, did they not go to total ash and actually a form of vaporization just from whatever heat it was?
There's no evidence of high heat. I've seen no evidence of high heat. To the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have people, like, if you made a big, grill, backyard grill, and you shrunk down to small size, could you walk over that grill and stand on it? You wear mitts to reach in your oven because it's hot. You wouldn't have people walking around there, and you wouldn't have the equipment working. You wouldn't have puddles of water in it. There's a picture at the basement of Tower 2. There's just this puddle at the bottom of an empty hole.
Okay. I want to come back to the high heat in just a minute, but we have a caller on the line. Caller, what's your name and what's your question?
Hello, this is Dan from Texas. Have you had an opportunity to review the most recent NIST report regarding the global collapse theory of Building 7? And if so, your top one or two issues with that? Thank you.
I prefer not to discuss that right now. I'll be glad to discuss that with you later, like in a week. But it's very concerning that they would put out a report like this, thermal expansion. If thermal expansion heats things up all the same, if it's, steel has thermal expansion of 13 microstream per degree C, and concrete is 12. That's very little difference. So you have to have a huge amount of temperature to get those being a significant different length. But the concrete is horizontal. Okay, just like with the towers, you'd have, the floors, you'd have the stuff. But the vertical pieces, it doesn't make sense. And it's sort of embarrassing to see a scientific establishment put out something like that. It's kind of like, is this a Twilight Zone?
No.
Or is it, are you in candid camera?
Well, Either I'm missing something or you're leading to something that is yet to come, but I go back to the thing that you bring to our mind constantly, and I think it's a good point. Where did the buildings go? And again, you said it wasn't any heat that would have put those buildings to ashes. So then in your mind, what are you thinking it actually is?
It's molecular dissociation.
Okay, so we're saying that that could be by a kind of space beam. Is that it?
That term space beam, I've never used. It's a derogatory term, and it's very misleading. It's some type of an energy weapon. It's field effects caused by energy beams or energy fields. There's a directed portion of it because we have the cylindrical holes.
Well, you say you never use that term, but then on your frequently asked questions and our answers, it says, is your space beam hypothesis testable? So that term is used on your very site. So what I'm saying is that what you're thinking, that it is that kind of, I don't know, what would you call it, cosmic, outer space, or other?
No, that's a frequently asked question. I think, I don't remember that being on there, but the answer would have been, I don't use that term.
Okay, well, I'm just quoting what's on your site, but I'm saying,
that's
what you're thinking?
That someone else has asked. These are literally frequently asked questions. Say, hey, you asked about space beams.
Or any kind of beam. I mean, are we back to that point where we're saying
it's energy. It's energy.
It's energy.
Right. And it's not directly connected. It's not like an extension cord running to something. For example, you have a remote control on your TV. It sends a signal through the air to your TV. Or your cell phone, the signal goes up to a satellite and back down someplace else. So that's a directed energy. It's not being used as a weapon, I don't think, unless you're detonating something. But, energy, there's probably all sorts of high-tech weaponry that's been around for quite a while. We just don't see it.
So you're saying it could potentially be air-based, ground-based, basically. It could be, you're just saying that it could be anywhere, not just necessarily in a satellite somewhere, is what I'm hearing, correct?
Oh, yes, correct.
Okay. And with all that, if what I'm hearing you is correct, what you're saying is the dust we saw is the material that should have gone boom down into the bathtub. That it literally...
It should have been beams and other things. There weren't enough beams left.
So if this was around and it got into people's lungs, does it stop disintegrating, or once it gets in you, this type of material, what would it do to a person if it got on them or in them? You know, what are the effects of this if you're around it?
Excellent point. If you have material that's still dissociating and breaking down and you inhale it, gosh, I can't imagine what it would do to your body, but nothing good. I would think it would cause a lot of cancer. It's going to be, it's probably weird energy effects on a very, very tiny level. They're going to send weird signals to different things.
And this kind of cancer then would not just be for the people at Ground Zero. It would be in the air all through New York, would it not?
Correct. And different people would be affected different ways. When I was there last fall, I noticed there's a traffic cop at the corner of Liberty and Church. He was wearing a yellow rubber hazmat suit. And it was like, 75 or 80 degrees, and people walking around the background with short sleeve shirts. It's a sunny day. And there's another photo I have. They're hosing down each other's boots, yellow rubber boots, like rubber hazmat suits. So some people there know what's going on, but when you go to that site, at least for me and other people I've talked with, you get a very sore throat. Your body senses there's something not right there.
But somebody else has told me that as well.
The steel laying around the ground rusts almost instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we only have about 10 minutes. There are a couple other topics here to discuss. One of them is, and I want to keep this one fairly brief so we can get to the next one, is you had mentioned there was actually a hurricane heading straight for New York on that day, and you also mentioned some magnetometer data.
Yes, thank you. What we saw was evidence of field effects, and lo and behold, there was a field effect. I discovered it when I was looking at, you know, the plume, and I wanted better pictures of the plume, so I went and looked up some weather satellite pictures, and, oh, my gosh, what is that? There's this huge hurricane, bigger than the square mileage of Katrina, right outside of New York City on 9/11. We had reports of thunder at LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark, New Jersey airports on 9/11. If you have reports of thunder, you have field effects.
And you're saying the thunder was not at the hurricane, so you're saying that was on a clear area.
Right. The hurricane was just right at the tip of Long Island, the Outer Bands. But there was rain reported on Long Island. And, it's like 500-600 miles in diameter, big, huge thing.
Okay, so for anybody out there listening, why do we care that there was a hurricane out there?
Why did we not hear about it?
Well, what does it have to do with the 9/11? I think that's what Brian's going for.
Right. For the people that maybe don't understand or don't know.
Well, when a storm is coming, people sense it in their joints. A lot of people do. So they're sensing the storm before it gets there. They're sensing something. That's a field effect. And what was also interesting, I looked at this magnetometer data, and right precisely when the North Tower got its hole at 8:46 in the morning, and when the South Tower got its hole, and when the South Tower went poof, when the North Tower went poof, and when Building 7 went poof, there's an abrupt change in the magnetometer chart.
Okay, so what is a magnetometer? What does that mean?
It monitors the Earth's magnetic field, the field strength in different directions, like north, south, east, west, and up, down.
Okay, so there was something in New York that sensed the buildings collapsed?
These readings were taken in Alaska. So it was strong enough that in Alaska it sensed it.
Okay, so again, how then does that fit in with 9/11? Certainly we weren't told about it, and certainly some people probably, you know, as you said, felt it because of their joints or other type of sensation.
Yeah, but then so much other excitement was going on, they, you know, didn't remember they felt it.
Right, so but how does that affect then the 9/11 scenario?
Well, when you, like I mentioned, I was looking into John Hutchison's work, how he creates these effects on his samples is interfering electrostatic fields with, you know, magnetic fields with radio frequency waves, and poof, stuff happens.
So you're saying the static fields would come from the hurricane?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how it works, but, you know, there's in labs, well, we know about Nikola Tesla, and that's, you know, the Tesla coil.
Mm. Right.
If you look at the structure of a hurricane, it looks just like a structure of a Tesla coil.
Well, and I saw on your website you'd mentioned that the eye goes to a funny shape, and then right after the buildings fall, the hurricane turns and goes out the opposite direction.
Yeah, it went straight for several days right towards New York City, then stops like at a chalk line there, makes a U-turn, more than a U-turn, and heads straight east.
Okay, so all that's interesting. With the 5 minutes we got left, we'll leave that for the people to look at on the website. You are apparently one of the only people that has a lawsuit out there regarding to 9/11. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can't talk about too many specifics, but NIST hired contractors to help them do their investigative report and to write the report on buildings 1 and 2.
Okay, what is NIST? Who is
National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Okay.
They were asked to figure out why the towers collapsed. Well, first of all, would you believe the report contains nothing about why the towers collapsed, even though it's titled The Collapse of the Towers. They quit studying what was going on before the towers went away. So, yeah, the towers were standing until they were no longer standing. And the people who were engaged in that report, the contractors, I believe, did something illegal. They signed off on a report that has bogus conclusions. Like, for example, UL had done fire studies for 2 hours. They had this mock-up of the floor And they couldn't get it to fail, so they called the test. If they could not get a single failure, how can they sign off a report saying that fires did it?
Okay, and then how does all this, how does NIST and these reports play back into your lawsuit?
Okay, the QTAM case is about those who have defrauded the government. And it's an avenue, it's about the only avenue we as citizens can take in addressing this. That, and I would think everyone who cares about the truth about 9/11 would, you know, be just quite interested in how this goes. How many of your tax dollars got wasted? Our tax dollars were spent on this bogus report.
Well, and I did read parts of that report, and I know that they also came out saying that the fire was responsible for everything, which is, to me, bogus as well. But in a little bit of time we have, is there some kind of conclusion you can, advance?
Oh, here's an interesting feature. The two biggest contractors that NIST hired are manufacturers and developers of directed energy weapons. Hmm. So they knew what they were looking at.
Okay, so my question then is, before we run out of time, Judy, and you've been a wonderful guest, is there some kind of conclusion you could advance about all of this?
We need to look at the data, and the more you look at the data will tell you exactly what happened, if you look at the data. There's plenty of evidence that we have there, and we all need to think for ourselves. I think that's the most important thing, because that's why this 9/11 happened.
What does the data tell you what happened? You're
pardon
the expert
me?
Here, so what does the data tell you?
The data tells me this molecular dissociation, something that caused the I didn't know about any of this until I started looking into it, but the data told me this, that something, an energy field, caused the building, instead of holding together, it separated matter. And I think the key is free energy. This is indicative that free energy is available to all, and it was used on 9/11.
Well, and I think you may be absolutely right about that, because certainly what happened at those towers defied physics, as we understand it to be. Is that not true?
As we understand, but if you know about this other method, It doesn't defy physics.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a more complex form of physics, because
you're saying it goes
into the assumptions you're making, wouldn't be correct. The building did not fall as a chunk; it just came apart and snowed down as dust.
So what you're saying is Tesla technology, you believe, possibly exists and in a more advanced form than is out in the public. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Thank you. Correct.
Well, we're saying, though, Tesla, his technology we've used through HARP and ELF and other electromagnetic waves and various, so this is not a far reach for that type of technology, would it be?
Correct. And the magnetometer data is just so striking. It's pretty much kind of flat up until, about 8:20 in the morning, and then it starts charging up, it looks like. And then it goes just haywire all over the place.
Well, I think we're going to have to get you back on, Judy, because you have been an excellent guest, and I'm certainly grateful for your appearance, and I certainly thank Brian for helping with this as well. And, I think you position a very good philosophy, and I think that's something we need to look at, because there's not been a real explanation for what has happened to those towers.
If you look at, I've got plenty of pictures there, and I invite everyone to just look at them, and they'll tell you what happened, especially those pictures with the fuzzy stuff around the feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why did the dust settle out so quickly and then become fine?
Well, thank you again, Judy. You were wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It was our pleasure. And listeners, stay tuned to Don DiMaggio, who has eyewitness viewpoint from Shanksville, where the Flight 93 crashed. Hold on, we're coming right back.